No, I was gonna say call me daddy or whatever it's called.
Oh, those are
Is it call her daddy? Call.
I think it's one of those. I think it's call her daddy.
God, yeah. finally, I make it work.
Finally, God, we have mentioned Evan's favorite podcast.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Whenever he hears call me daddy, he's just in.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 10 do's and 500 don'ts of auction fantasy football drafts. My name is Jeff Crisco, here with Evan Hoovler, Waleed Ismail, and Tony Steele. Evan, how's it going today?
I miss Dolly.
You what?
You miss Dolly.
You miss Dolly.
Yeah.
That
made me sad.
Still heavy. Still feeling a little heavy. I'm going to bring it, but man, RIP to one of the realest real ones ever.
My wife we're was talking like, about the I don't sheep, even know right? why.
R.I.P.
My wife Sorry, was like, Waleed. She's like, I don't even know why I'm crying about this. I'm like, you should always cry for awesome people.
My kids were like, oh, isn't that the girl who donates the books? They didn't even like. Yeah. That's what they know her for.
Yeah. It will be. We'll soldier on. Tony, how's it going?
The only thing I gotta say. Is that Dolly Parton could have written the Communist Manifesto, but Karl Marx couldn't have written 9 to 5.
That's right.
No. See, I would have gone with Jolene.
And and I Will Always Love You, which she wrote the same day she wrote Jolene.
Yes.
I thought it was the same day she wrote 9 to 5. No, 9 to 5 was she just kind of tapped it out. That's what it was. That was the legend. Yep. Yeah. All right. We do have a couple pieces of housekeeping up off the top. I screwed up in the main feed. I accidentally posted the running backs episode twice. Shout out to the listener who updated me on that. And then another one. We've been doing this a while. We actually have I don't want to say a letter. We have a mailbox thing. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Do we have mailbox music? Do we have mailbox music?
I'm gonna put in the Blues Clues mail thing and get copyright struck immediately. All right, so this is question here is I am in a $200 budget auction draft. It is 32 teams, okay? So it's a massive league. I only have $60 left and I spent all of my money on Amani Hooker. This is from what? A Hooker from Jed York. He spent 140 of his $200 budget on Amani Hooker. Long walk, folks. Let's see. Tony's got his head in his hands.
We're ready. We're locked in.
All right. So this is episode 7, Building a Bench. And this is kind of like Evan's
just want that question to finish. I want to know where you were going to go with that.
Oh, it was a Jed Hooker or Jed Hooker.
No, I know where Jed you York, were going with it.
Sex worker.
But
joke.
I wanted him to.
Oh, I had Waleed, there was no landing gear on that plane.
Yeah, just he already went there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's you living the setup.
Downtown he there.
Setup. He gave me the setup. You didn't give me the finish.
Do you know how you
guys, the finish was? Oh, sorry, a Hooker.
Yeah. You know how excited I got when I remembered Amani Hooker existed for that joke?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Guys, if we what you've been telling me is true, right? Such a small portion of your bench, like that's $1, right? You're building your bench off $1 players. And if you're a billionaire, $140 is adding to your bench for what is essentially less than 0.5% of
a dollar
in the bank.
Yeah. Right. Remember I talk about the price of entry is a dollar no matter what for the bottom players. So if you're a billionaire, that price of entry, that 140, it's essentially a dollar.
Correct. So Jed York also building his toolbox bench this week.
That's right. All right. Let's get into bench strategy. So Evan, I feel like one of Evan's seminal theories, speaking of Jed York, seminal theories.
Seminal theories has to be the title.
as a highfalutin strategy is the toolbox bench, and it's Evan built it for auction, but I feel like it's really useful in any format. So Evan, what let's talk about the toolbox bench. What made you think of it? What let's outline it. Let's talk about the toolbox bench, because this episode's all about building your bench.
Right. So the year was 2019 and I knew something was wrong. I know in 2019 so much was wrong, but for my fantasy football outlook, something was wrong. I made the playoffs regularly in my fantasy football big money league, but I only had won one playoff game in the last 7 years. So I started looking at my playoffs, started looking at my team, started looking at the teams that went deeper in the playoffs, and I realized that, first of all, longevity is built on bench. You know, you're it's football. Your starters are going to get injured. And I realized just drafting guys on your bench because they're going to score high or the highest on your bench makes no sense. Who cares how much you score? You're on my bench. So then I realized I should be drafting to fill roles when my bench actually gets the call to start. And so I came up with toolbox bench strategy as an instead of drafting guy, the next highest guy, the next player up, I should draft guys based on what they're going to do later in the season when I actually need to start them. And I came up with a strategy. I won't get into it yet because it's just the intro. But after that, I made my finals 3 years in a row and won two of them. And this was a 14-team league. So, you know.
Okay. So, toolbox bench. Why is it called that?
Because you have a toolbox. You don't have a hammer and then your backup hammer and then maybe your third string hammer. You've got your hammer and your socket wrench. And then maybe my socket wrench doesn't have the right I don't know, maybe it's a foreign part. I want to have my adjustable wrench for when that is it, for when it needs to step up and fill a role that my socket wrench can't. And so that's what I think. I'm a very amateur person, but I own a home. So I'm constantly like, oh, this part doesn't work. Why don't I have this other tool? Dang it. I need to get this other tool.
Don't so forget your dynamite.
So it sounds like the idea behind it is that you have players to fit roles on your bench, and you need to think about what players you like that fit those roles, because if you need a socket wrench later in the year and all you have are hammers, it's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. That's something I just came up with. My name is Alanis Morissette, everybody. So let's
can start. I, can I interrupt with a fun fact? A guy in my big money league is married to Alanis Morissette's doula.
What? Actually, yep. Well, I am not surprised Alanis Morissette has a doula, to be honest.
Yeah, several. She has several.
Yeah. What, she, one of her team of doulas.
I will just say, right. You should only have two.
A doula?
Yeah.
Hold on, wait.
A doula bot.
British. Wait, hold on. British pop star with two birth assistants. That would be the Dua Lipa doula duo.
Love it.
That Pucks. Runway is getting shorter, Jeff.
All right, Evan, let's start. Okay, so toolbox bench. What are the different tools that you put on your bench? Just broad categories.
It's three.
Three tools.
Boring players, usually running backs, who have a higher floor than most for when it's bye week or when I need to sit out a short-term injury. I don't want to go to the waiver wire and get, you know, the backup running back who might score a touchdown or not. I just want to get me some 8 points on some PPR and whatever. Those really boring players. I have some examples this year, but I'm going to save them for later because I like a good tease. Okay. Number two or three guys who are a step away from a huge role. The backups for high volume running backs are usually it there. You know, guys who, hey, if there's an injury or something, this guy is the guy. And now he might do better than one of my starters. That's when I want to start him. And number three, rookies. Rookies always take forever. It's like starting an outboard motor. It takes a while. Let me just bench you. And then maybe when you flip out in the last half of the season, you fuel a playoff run.
Okay. All righty. So, We'll come back to some examples of those types of players, but Walid had some good questions. Before we get to those, Tony, any questions yet?
Nope. I like this. I don't think that there's necessarily a huge ideological difference between getting a toolbox bench in Snake versus getting a toolbox bench in Auction. And I'm sure I'm totally wrong, so I'm excited to be corrected throughout this episode.
No, well, Evan, let me. Oh, Walid, what do you think? Is there?
Yeah, Walid should weigh in because I don't know.
I actually agree with that. I don't think there's much of a difference because the fact of the matter is, like, once I get to the seventh round of the Snake draft, I kind of don't care what ADP is. I'm just grabbing my guys because, like I've said it before, I'm going to be churning my bench anyway, so I want to target the guys that I really think could break out, and I'm not going to really stress anything else.
Okay. Can I add a fourth tool to this bench just for the preseason? Ooh. Are you ready
Let's
for
go.
This?
Let's
this
go.
Is that classic piece of advice, and that would be just handcuffs, not necessarily to your running back, but just guys who, if there's an injury in training camp, say, I don't know, if like Ashton Gentry's leg explodes, but then it miraculously comes back together. You would probably be pretty happy to have Mike Washington instead of, say, Chris Boswell. What I'm saying is, if your format allows it, don't draft a kicker, don't draft a defense, use that dollar on a bench running back, and then cut them before the season starts.
Yeah, that's great. It's basically a nice new wrinkle on the second type, 2 to 3 guys who are one event from away from a huge role. But it's good to note that, like, you can kind of work that a little more in the preseason.
Yeah, I would say that it's kind of a subcategory. It's guys that you... they're just lottery tickets. You're like, if something happens between now and week one, this could be league winner. But if something doesn't happen, I'm not going to cry if I drop them to have that kicker or defense.
I am of the belief that regardless of your format, as long as you can get away with not drafting either a kicker or a defense, you absolutely should. And just wait until Friday of week one to pick up a defense. Like,
yeah,
someone exactly. I get that logic. I never do it. I always I've always got my week one defenses kind of targeted. I want to make sure I have them.
I just did that in a Snake draft, and all I'm doing is waiting for Jordan Tyson to get put on IR so that I can pick up my
defense. I get it. I get why people do it. I just usually by the point that I'm at the end of the draft, there's not an extra guy I want. Like, if there is a guy that I think is going to kick ass, I will absolutely take him, and I'll pass on the kicker if there's two guys. But a lot of times there's not someone I'm really excited about at that spot where I feel like that. I'd much rather, if I think I can get a better kicker who's going to do well. Like, I feel like people undervalue, they act like kickers are random. They're not. Like, it's just a lot harder to predict, and no one cares. And they'd much rather bitch about kickers than actually learn how to, like, manage that. I know. Whoa. I haven't done my model yet. They got rid of that.
Walid, save it for the 9-part kicker podcast.
Ooh, next season.
next season, yeah.
I would say, though, that the current meta being so heavy on going for it on fourth down really shortens up the amount of kickers that I would consider fantasy viable.
That yeah. I agree with.
That's true.
Which is why you should be, if you're listening to this and you haven't done your draft yet, you should be prioritizing Dicker from the Chargers and McLaughlin from Tampa Bay, both of whom could kick usually in nice weather places and have coaches that are conservative dickheads.
Yeah. Take them in the fourth round. Don't do that.
Jalen Naylor, Cameron Dicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jalen Naylor, Cameron Dicker, and the Tampa Bay guy. Make sure you have a backup kicker.
Yeah.
Those are your first three picks. Lock them in.
You're definitely a tool if you do that for the tool.
You need that second guy to cover the bye week.
Exactly.
Someone's been reading my article that I wrote specifically to trick AI into not stealing from my articles.
I have been telling so many of my friends about this because I think it is the funniest goddamn thing. Keep stealing his information. So he's just like putting a header to let people know this is not actually good information, just to fuck with AI.
This is to trick AI. I can't wait to read about all of those strategies in next year's Sports Illustrated auction article, Evan.
Yeah, right.
Right.
All right. Let's get back to the toolbox bench. Walid had some questions that he put in, and I will be reading them. So what do you look for in a bench running back? Would you say you end up with more of type one, type two, or type three guys as running backs?
For me, one thing I like is looking for a guy who has a PPR role. I really like getting rookies. Like, even if they're not first or day one or day two picks, I think those day three rookies, because I feel like if they hit and like someone gets hurt in front of them, they have breakout potential and they could get out there in the second half and show a lot more. Like, they're guys, those are the guys that you stash. Like, even though I say I churn my roster, there will be like one or two guys that I'm holding for the long term because I think they're going to be viable like in the weeks that really matter. I don't like cutting those guys unless shit's gone horribly, horribly.
And I think that's one point we have to remember is remember why you drafted these guys.
Yeah.
When you're doing the toolbox bench, if you drafted a bench and hold rookie, don't drop him because he doesn't have a huge role in week one.
Like a guy Tony mentioned last episode was, well, maybe not last episode, but two episodes ago in the running back thing, was Tajee Spears. We know that Cam Ward has a like high check down rate. He's going to like have a role. He's got a nice floor. He's a guy who could fill in. And if something happens to Pollard, he might see more looks. So he's a guy that, like, guys like that, I do like.
This is another reason why I just remembered, it's not in the article, but this is another reason why I made the toolbox pinch, is Waleed's really good at surfing the waiver wire. Check out his articles every week. I am not. I teach elementary school and I primary parent. And so come September, I forget all about fantasy football, which I've been obsessing about all summer. I forget all about it until Saturday. And so I'm like, I need some guys who will just be there for me, even though, you know, I wasn't really maintaining the bench. So it's another quote-unquote advantage if you're someone like me who has real trouble keeping up with fantasy during the regular season work weeks.
Yeah, and I think one point, too, is with the – well, I'll build on that Tajee Spears example that Waleed brought up with the kind of boring player with the high floor. I think he's going to have a different role in the offense than Tajee Spears, but – he's a type of player that we're going to get a lot of clarity about really quick. If I don't think this is going to happen, but I'm using it as an example. If Nick Singleton comes out and has like a 38% snap share behind Tony Pollard, then we can go, oh, well, if that's happening right off the rip, then maybe Tajee Spears isn't the right guy for my bench and I can churn him off there. So that's a type of thing that when you have these guys and you want to figure out who to cut for the waiver wire, know why you have them. And if it's a high floor guy like Tajee Spears, and if he's getting out snapped by Nick Singleton, you know, right away, you're like, ah, shit, this guy isn't on my bench for the reason I want him to be.
Yeah. You got to always reanalyze the situation. The more data you have, the more you have to adjust your information. That's the thing in this industry. People love to just stick to their priors, and you have to just, as you get new information, let a guy go. It's okay.
I will never, quote, reassess my priors, Waleed.
Well, that's true. Like, I will say Justin Fields still, I believe in it. It's going to happen any day now.
So, Evan, are you also, can I throw an addendum into the toolbox bench? Can you also include some sort of, like, this is also like a spider plant bench because I don't need to take care of it, but it's always going to be there when I need it?
Ooh, let's do a gardening. Let's go write a gardening article next year.
Because you don't have to really nurture it, right? Like, it doesn't need sunlight. It doesn't need to be fed very often. You don't got to water it. Like, it's just kind of...
shittier your team is, the more it grows.
Yeah, for me, your spider plant is my super hot pepper. Because on days I forget to water it, well, guess what? It just got that much hotter. It's there fine. It grew up in the desert.
Perfect. Sure. All right. Question two, what are you looking for in a bench wide receiver when you're building your toolbox bench?
So I'm... Oh, go for it, Waleed. Yeah, please.
I'm looking at historical data for how receivers are used in offenses, and I'm just trying to look for estimated target shares, how these guys are looking, what kind of role I can get from them. Like, do they get, are they going to get a lot of targets, but like it's going to be Khalil Shakir targets, which kind of aren't very good. But if it's full PPR, Khalil Shakir looks a lot better because he might have like five or six targets that like at least gives him a baseline floor. Like, I'm looking at my rules, and then I'm just trying to get a guy who can get like a certain level of volume. I'm also, I love like my rookies because they drafted a guy, and the better your draft pedigree, the more interested I am in adding you to my bench. And wide receivers, I feel like as rookies, like there's always guys who just bust out or day three picks. And if you can just get that right guy, man, it can take you a long way. They break out like huge.
No, I did the math on it a few years ago. Rookie wide receivers, day three picks have a 2% hit rate their rookie year. And I classify the hit rate as finishing in the top 36 at wide receiver.
So just day one and two and three?
Yeah, no, just day one and two.
And four.
No, just day one and two.
Oh, I meant rounds one, two, and three. Yeah. I got that crossed. I got
rounds one and two. So I look at wide receivers a little bit differently because I look at 20 to 40 as a wide receiver cohort group, because you get guys that are similarly tiered talent wise in that group. So I don't really differentiate between rounds one and two, but so days one and two have about a 20% hit rate their rookie year. And you can pretty much figure out who the guys that are going to hit are going to be top 36 their rookie year.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because you can figure out the 20% that's not going to matter because they're like Tutu Atwell and D. Eskridge were both day two picks.
Jake Bobo just missed the cut.
Yeah. And you're like, they're not going to hit. So rookie wide receivers have about 2% hit rate, and that's rounding up. Or day three wide receivers, I mean, have about a 2% hit rate, and that's rounding up. And you can think of the guys off the top of your head. Amon Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua. You can classify Victor Cruz, even though he's a UDFA. Like, those are the guys that hit their rookie year.
Antonio Brown. Yeah.
Days one and two, though, those are where you're looking for your rookie wide receivers.
I got to say, though, this year, Jacoby Lane's looking like maybe he'll buck that trend, or maybe he'll be for that 2%.
Was he a fourth rounder? I thought he was a third rounder. Is that Surratt was the third rounder?
No.
Yeah, he's a fourth rounder. He was fourth round.
He was fourth round. Okay. So he's a possibility.
I will fact check this while you talk.
Okay. And that just goes back to expending draft capital. You know, if you spend a day two pick on a wide receiver, chances are you are going to use him. If you spend a day three pick on a running back, you could fall ass backwards into needing him. So those guys have, I haven't run the numbers, but just anecdotally, those guys have a higher hit rate.
Oh no, you're right. Jacoby was a third round. And since I have the floor, when I studied my league and the teams that went far in the playoffs, I noticed that a lot of them had a surging wide receiver who broke out in the last half of the season. And that kind of makes logical sense because, you know, I'm not going to start a wide receiver on my bench in my starting lineup because they don't get injured. They just, you know, it's PPR, maybe HPPR. They do what they're supposed to do. Whereas I'm always churning through running backs because teams are churning through running backs. So I started looking for wide receivers specifically that have the potential to break out later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then that ties into what everyone else is saying here.
And I did run, to tell you how long ago this was, it was when it was still a 16-game season. I did run the numbers on rookie wide receivers and guys who finished top 40, I think it was, in their rookie year. They usually, if you split the season into quadrants, they're usually hitting in two of the four quadrants, two consecutive quadrants. So like 1-2, and then they fall off. Or they struggle to at the beginning, 2-3, and then they hit the wall. Or the guys that Evan's talking about, they struggle to start, but you have them stashed, and then in the third and fourth quarter of the season, that's when they hit. It's rare for them to be good all four quarters as a rookie. So just if you have a rookie on your bench, maybe hang on to him a little bit longer if he's a wide receiver, if he doesn't hit the wall, and if he doesn't hit right away, and if he starts hot, maybe trade him.
I think that's something people kind of tend to forget. We get so excited about rookies. We always seem to forget that most of them, it takes a little bit for them to actually like work up and ramp up to become part of an offense. Learning NFL offense is complex shit. It's not easy, and they're not going to put someone out there. Coaches don't give a shit about your fantasy team. They're not going to put a guy out there that they can't trust.
So can I circle this back to Toolbox and Auction briefly?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we're talking about these rookies and the patience that's required for you to hold. Like, most of the leagues that I play in are, you know, five spot benches, right? So not a lot of wiggle room and not necessarily a lot of dedicated churn spots. So I'm thinking about two players that are right now, they're fluctuating, right? But I would say they're in the same general area with like a Mekhi Lemon, who is somewhat hurt, but absolutely, I thought he had the best receiver film in this class. It's most likely looking like he's going to start slow. I believe that would be the expectation. So you can, in auction, instead of being in snake and really trying to sweat it out, in auction, you can get a Wandale Robinson or a Khalil Shakir that you can use to fill that spot if someone gets hurt and kind of bide your time a little bit and kind of protect that asset that you're expecting to come through in the second half of the season. That seems like a natural advantage to building the toolbox in auction that you can't do in snake.
Yeah, exactly. And remember, we talked about before about how you have so much more control over the bottom part of your roster in auction versus snake, because you are like, okay, get your little posted out. Wandale Robinson, no matter what. Like, you can, it looks like I'm looking here. Average costs on 12 teamers from Evan's sheet, $2 for Wandale, high of $4. If you budget $4, you know, you're basically assuring yourself a Wandale Robinson to protect your Mekhi Lemon, who is not. Oh, there he is. Also $4. So for $8, you insure, you know, those two guys.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. So let's go back to Waleed's questions here. Next question from Waleed was, how do you roster more than one quarterback / tight end as a part of your toolbox bench?
And I will lead again here, because my answer is it kind of depends on how I went about it. If I have Josh Allen, I don't give a fuck about getting a second quarterback. But if I end up spending a lot of my money early, and I think this is the same way, it's kind of the same logic that will apply in draft. It depends on the team that I've built. Like if I have QB11, like if I have Brock Purdy, I might add like Kyler Murray to him just to have a second option just in case, because these are guys, because they're QB10, QB11, there's a little bit more inherent risk to them, I think, than a guy like Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. Like I trust them a lot more to be consistent because I have a history of them being fairly successful.
I'm a little bit confused by your example because that's going to be 2026 QB1 that you're handcuffing.
That's true.
Yeah.
I just picked his name because he was near. I should have used Dak. Like I should have realized
that's QB2.
Really? You're mm-hmm. that high in Dak?
Caleb QB3, just to placate both of you.
Okay. Just so you don't have to hear it from us. You're not going to hear it because you have him at 3. Like that's
actually crazy. After that photo shoot today, Caleb might be QB1.
Yeah. Yeah. Confidence.
But yeah, I would say my thought on it is if it's 5 or 4 bench spots, I'm probably not going to roster a second onesie.
It all depends because, on the league too.
Well, because everybody is working with that bench restriction. So
yeah,
if I need a spot starter, I will probably find one off of the waiver wire. And obviously Superflex changes this because it increases the rarity of quarterbacks. But
absolutely,
if everybody's working with that short bench, it increases the startability, the streamability of players on the waiver wire. If it's a 6 or 7 man bench, I'm probably going to run out of guys that I want. And if I, and to Waleed's point, if I have Dallas Goedert, I'll get Isaiah Likely. But if I have Tyler Warren, Colson Loveland, Tucker Kraft, I'm not going to get a second guy. So, so yeah, it really depends to me on the size of the bench and what the players I have are. But if it's a short bench, I'm probably not rostering a second onesie player.
I'm with that. I don't believe in that shit.
Yeah. And really it gets to a point with the 6 or 7 man bench where it's really like the upside case is better for Isaiah Likely than like a, like I can get Isaiah Likely or Emmett Johnson. Like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll take Isaiah Likely there because Emmett Johnson's out is a Kenneth Walker injury. So
right. Never do I do that. Do I roster a second onesie?
There you go. Just,
you can't pull a top 12 running back out of free agency most years. You can't pull a top 12 wide receiver out of free agency most years. You could every year there's some quarterbacks that end up top 12 that were mostly undrafted. So yeah, even if I have 7 benches, I'm just let me do the bet on the skill positions more and not the quarterback.
You do need more of them. So that's a perfectly viable alternative. So how do you balance rookies versus veterans? And I think Tony touched on this really well with his Mekhi Lemon and Wandale Robinson question. So I was wondering if there's anything either of you wanted to expand on balancing rookies versus veterans on the toolbox bench.
I think it's important that you have both. Like when I'm building my bench, I'm not just looking for like upside long shots that don't have data. I want some floor guys because part of your bench is we're trying to find the breakout players and like not just necessarily rookies, but year 2 and year 3 players who might like we might see progression from. Compared to also just like having a little insurance for when something goes wrong with one of your starters, which it inevitably will.
I kind of wanted to expand briefly on the concept of the like the rookie, but also kind of like what you're saying, Wally, like the sophomore. I like dudes on their rookie contracts that have decent peripherals that have potentially changing situations.
Yes. Agreed.
Like I think someone, and I know that this is like a very last end of bench guy, but I think about a guy like Jalen Knoll, who he had decent peripherals last year. The only guy running in front of him in the slot is gone. Yeah. And that could be a guy that you get in the last round of your draft that could turn into a, you know, get you a Khalil Shakir or a Wandale Robinson type target share or Josh Downs.
A guy who can throw into flex based on matchup and who can cover in bye weeks when you're not feeling so bad.
Correct.
But even two. Even if I have a five person bench, even two rookies, it's hard to juggle because you need to be able, despite the fact that I love not having to do it, you need to be able to juggle, rotate people out on your bench based on who comes up in free agency, especially those first few weeks. You need to have a spot. And if I'm weighing a rookie who I think might break out in the last half of the year versus a guy that I would use now, that's I'd rather just cut a high floor veteran like Waleed and Tony were talking about and get that guy now. You need to have some sort of
dynamism.
Yeah, I was going to say dynamism. You totally know me. But I want to say you have to have some sort of rotation on your bench between your bench and the FA. You have to allow for that. And too many rookies gums that up.
And that brings it back to the toolbox. If your toolbox is 40% hammers, you're in trouble.
It's true.
Yeah. It makes sense. Unless you got a shit ton of nails and then you're cooking.
But what if I break two hammers is something nobody have ever done?
Evan, do you...
I mean, isn't that the quarterback conversation?
That's true.
Do you try to find guys that could potentially fit multiple of these roles, or is it kind of like role-specific?
That is absolutely the key. That is absolutely the key, is finding guys who can fit multiple of those. Give me that boring... Like you said it earlier, who's Tony Pollard's...
Tajay Spears,
boring high floor guy. If Tony Pollard goes down, well, now he's going to be just starting value. Yeah, you just checked off two of those boxes. And that's what allows you, that was a perfect question, Tony. That's what allows you to maybe free up that one spot where you can wiggle. You can drop the dude, grab the free agency hotness, because if other players are filling more than one role, well, then you're checking more than one box, and then you got all those boxes checked with fewer players.
And that's the thing. It's all about how many paths to success does a player have. That's how we should be evaluating all players.
Yeah. So, like, for example, I'm trying to think of examples of this. You have, like, a wide receiver. I'm thinking of, like, a Parker Washington or a DJ Moore, who's going to be a PPR guy, but who could possibly also emerge as the undisputed target hog of the offense. That's a guy who has a high floor, but a decent ceiling as well. At running back, if he wasn't hurt, Tony, you outlined it really well on the Bears episode, Kyle Monningay. That's something that's always stuck with me of TH Fantasy was the Kyle Monningay, the case for Kyle Monningay. I think that's another one. Kenny Gainwell is an injury contingent upside kind of guy, but I think he's going to have PPR value. So those are kind of those two for guys that, you know, we're not mentioning quarterbacks, right? Quarterbacks kind of are what they are. They're either going to hit at, you know, they're not like, there's no contingent upside to a quarterback, right? It's like they are what they are. Either they're going to break out or they're going to be a solid floor guy.
And you've named so we've been naming wide receivers, so I just want to chime in with a running back or two. Jadarian Price, the running back, the first round pick for Seattle. Mm-hmm. He's going to get usage. He's not going to flip out. When Zach Charbonnet comes back, he's going to get a lot less usage. Unless Zach Charbonnet, the name I just said once and then said it wrong. Unless you know Zach Charbonnet doesn't come fully back, and then Jadarian Price will be that late season breakout. So he fulfills that boring high upside early, late season. Hey, if things go right, you could break out kind of role, that dual role. So it's true for running backs as well as wide receivers. Perfect. Just way more true for wide receivers.
I am trying. Last draft strat from me about this is that I am trying to leave every draft with one of the following four players: it's Swift, Monungai, Dobbins, or Jonah Coleman.
Because I like that four.
That to me is there's a good chance that two of those dudes are insane ROIs. You have two high powered rush games, and like you're either betting on Dobbins to stay healthy for 17, or if you want to bet against that, then you should be taking Jonah Coleman.
Yeah.
And to fully expand on what Jeff was alluding to is like Monungai is a good runner on his own. Swift is a great runner on his own, but the reason why I like taking shots on those guys is because if one of them goes down, enjoy your championship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same way, I think if J.K. Dobbins, you know, knock on wood, this doesn't happen, like tears his ACL in week two, Jonah Coleman's going to get 18 carries on the behind the best offensive line in football.
And I think that's going to roll right into because the Bears, I think the Bears offensive line reclamation project is one of the more successful things that's happened in the last few years. That rolls into Waleed's last question, which is how important is the quality of the team your bench guys play on? And Tony, you outlined it perfectly.
Yeah.
If you're taking backup running backs, take backup running backs who are running behind some, you know, maulers up front, some road graders, because that lessens the difficulty curve for them, right?
Yeah. Like if you like a handcuff, like Tank Bigsby, you look at that offensive line, it's like, oh yeah, if something happened to Saquon, this guy could be that. Like finding guys like that make a lot more sense to me.
Counterpoint, Tank Badsby, first of all.
Well, I mean, I just picked a handcuff that had like a situation. Brian Robinson. How about that?
Atlanta, huh?
Big fan. I mean, I'm saying that situation, that's a good offensive line, and Brian Robinson Jr. is actually good.
Yeah, you can take a shot at Brian Robinson.
If it's your team, man.
That was a Brian Robinson got shot joke.
Boom.
All right. Evan is the tallest man on earth right now. What is going on? Evan's camera is pointed directly up at him.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get some input from Waleed and Evan on the importance of the team that your bench guys play on.
Evan?
Tony nailed it. Tony nailed it.
Tony, Okay.
You know, if you're looking for that late season breakout, no, I back it up. A lot of these great running backs are great despite their offensive line. They're just so talented. Ashton Jeanty, for instance, just to name one. Devon Achane. But if they go down, their backup is not going to be startable at all. So, yeah, it's definitely... Oh,
I don't know if I agree with that. You've got
to be Ollie Gordon head.
Okay. Hey, you can be an Ollie Gordon head. That's cool. But you see my point, though. Like,
yeah,
what y'all are saying is correct. That's
they're what special I because little they're to special. Add. Yeah, they're special because they're special. They're not special because the team is good.
I will say, I think you guys are misunderstanding what I meant with this question.
Okay, so we'll leave.
Say it another way. When you say how important is the quality of your team, your bench guys play on, I did mean it from an NFL standpoint, but this is actually, there's like two sides to this question. The starters that you drafted are have to, like, how I draft my bench guys is going to be impacted by the starters that I took. Like, I'm a zero RB guy. So if I have like Justin Jefferson, Drake London, Nico Collins, guess what? I kind of am, I'm cool with getting like one random floor guy, like a Khalil Shakir who can give me a baseline, something like some guy like that. And then getting like a rookie that could possibly break out in the end. If I have like better running backs, I'm more willing to take shots on guys who can go up there. Because honestly, if my starters get hurt, I'm kind of already going to be somewhat fucked anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I have three top flight wide receivers,
yeah,
I'm probably not taking a floor guy.
Yeah, and that's kind of important. This is the big distinction in auction, is you can have Puka Nacua, Ja'Marr Chase, and like Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, the rest of your team's going to have some real problems. So you have to look at, like, you have to build your bench around that, because there's a big disparity on how your starters are going to look.
Okay. So now I understand the question. So in that case, yeah, quality of the team, your bench guys. Yeah, I would say after about six or seven rounds, I really try to take stock of, like, how my wide receivers look versus my running backs. And I'm more of a hero RB guy. So chances are I'm going to be taking upside shots at running back and, having more of them. Yeah. Whereas with the wide receivers, I'm probably going to let that position slide a little bit further and, maybe only go outside guys.
I kind of have a mental rule with this where I look at my top three receivers and top three running backs that once I've drafted them. And then in my head, I'm like, which one of these positions is better? And then I overdraft the other one.
Exactly. So, and that's where you'll need more. I think I misspoke what I was saying before. If you have a worse set of top three guys, you probably want to get a floor guy and an upside guy. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, because you will need that stopgap if everything falls apart. You're like, oh shit, dude, my wide receivers are terrible. I just need to be able to plug in Jalen Warren or Tony Pollard, or my running backs are terrible. Just let me plug in Jalen Warren or Tony Pollard to like stem the bleeding while I figure out what I'm doing with the rest of these running backs. So, like, if your starting running backs are like Quinshon Judkins and Jadarian Price, you're like, oh fuck, that's a problem.
I want a bunch, yeah. Like, then I definitely want like a Rico Dowdle, a Jalen Warren,
a Bill,
like a guy who might get volume.
Yeah, I'm the only one drafting Bill, by the way, in the whole world.
No, I think Bill's a good pick right now.
Yes. I'm very curious about Bill. Because I feel like...
Bill Curious?
I'm very Bill Curious.
Title.
We've seen this in years past where people think this guy's going to do so well, he's their sleeper, and then when he underperforms the next year, we knock him down a little lower than we should have. I feel like that's what's kind of happening with Bill this year.
Yeah, it's a post-hype sleeper is what they call it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I couldn't think of the term.
Yeah. As much as we gas up Rashad White, I think it's also easy to forget that we're gassing up Rashad White.
Yeah, Rashad White is bad. He's a bad football player.
I mean, right. I don't think he's a bad football player. I just don't think he's
cut
a
his
good
mic.
Player either.
Yeah, we're done.
We're done here. We're done here, Waleed. When we're gassing up Rashad White, we're done here.
I didn't. Right. I'm not gassing him. The second half of my sentence matters. I don't think he's good. I just don't think he's bad. I think he's.
Oh wow.
Fine. Waleed. He's a guy.
Apologies. Keep it up,
he's
and
not,
I'm.
He's,
I'm
not gonna... he's not exciting. I get it. He's boring. But
keep it
like,
up, and I'm using my mod powers on you, like I used on Brian Sklar in the Discord. So cooked. Keep it up.
Cooked.
Love that.
All right. So the part that we've been waiting for, Evan teased it. So we've got the three types of players for your toolbox bench, and I'm hoping Evan's still here because all we can see is his light.
Yeah.
Yay.
He's still here. Okay. So the three types of toolbox players. I'm gonna read it off, and Evan, I would like some examples of these players. This is how we're gonna go out on the episode. Boring players with a high floor. What are some players this season that you're finding you're ending up with on your bench that meet this criteria?
This is kind of just a summary here, but like Tony Pollard, like you said, Tajay Spears. Sorry, Tootin lovers, but Rachel Tootin's on a committee. Either of those nerds on Pittsburgh. Any guy who's got more than 85 receptions last year in a PPR or half PPR league for wide receivers. Yeah.
Those types of guys. Okay.
Yeah.
Number two, guys who are a step away from a big role.
Well, again, Tajay Spears. I would say Travion Henderson. If Stevenson goes down, well,
yeah.
He's proud to be the bell cow, you know? Yeah. Roll it down here. Oh, I don't want to say this name.
Say the name.
I think Cleveland's offense might be running through Quinshon Judkins by week 8.
Why? What makes you say that? They have a $250 million quarterback.
Yeah. We said it earlier, Tyler Allgeier. Oh my gosh, who is Aaron Jones's backup?
Jordan Mason.
Thank you. Those kinds of guys. It's hard for me to make that. Honestly, I don't think I can make that assessment with wide receiver because we've seen it time and time again. Wide receiver one goes down. That doesn't king wide receiver two. They just change the scheme, you know?
That's true, but I do have I was thinking of this all episode. I do have an example of a wide receiver that will probably step up big if a guy ahead of him gets hurt.
Great.
And a guy that has gotten hurt a lot, and that is Jalen McMillan if Chris Godwin gets hurt.
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one.
Tony co-signs. Double.
I co-sign. We all co-sign. That's a good example.
Yeah, that's a guy who is one step away from a big role if somebody gets hurt ahead of him. And Chris Godwin gets hurt all the time.
Yep.
I also think that if you look at guys that are kind of 1A, 1B, they also have a contingent upside, not necessarily for your bench. So you're looking
Jordan
at
Addison.
Like, I was going to say Jordan Addison is a good example of a 1B. But what I was going to say is your Bears guys, Romadunze, Luther Burden. That's a big one. Your Packers guys, Jaden Reed, Christian Watson.
Well, I disagree with that, but everything else you said has been gold.
Wow. This guy loves Matthew Golden. That's why he said gold. I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head. You got enough. The Jacksonville guys.
Devontae Adams.
Actually, I feel like if somebody gets hurt, they're going to rotate and get a lot more Travis Hunter, so that might not
work. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was going with that.
All right. Last one, and I want input from all three of you on this because this is not auction specific. Rookies.
Yeah.
That you want to bench and hold this year.
And I'll start because
to bench and hold.
And I'll start because I'll start. Yeah, I'll start because my plan was to just name a few and then toss it to those two because you all are way better at scouting than me. But I can't think of a running back. Hopefully you can. But of course, this is not going to be news. But as wide receivers, Tate, Tyson, Lemon. That's police supplement.
Yeah, that's actually like, especially with Tyson hurt now, I feel like he might be a little bit cheaper, and that's a guy you stash on IR, and he could be really good. When you were talking about running backs, like Tony already named my guy, Jonah Coleman this year is a great rookie stash, I think.
Jonah Coleman is a guy that I'm ending up with in a lot of places. And I actually just thought of another guy with injury contingent upside who is also a draft and hold rookie, who is also getting a ton of preseason buzz, who also is on my favorite football team, who is also a pick that I hated. That would be DeJon Stribling.
Oh yeah, he's in even more and more of my rosters. Yeah.
Yeah. Stribling, he's got three 30-year-olds ahead of him in the four, if you count Debo, ahead of him in the pecking order. So
he can survive the power lines.
And he should survive the power lines. It's like that high pitched whine that only kids can hear, but the opposite. Only old people are affected by the substation.
The New Mexico hum.
So Mike Evans gets hurt, DeJon Stribling's role grows. Christian McCaffrey gets hurt, DeJon Stribling's role grows. George Kittle gets hurt, DeJon Stribling's role grows. Because behind him is DeMarcus Robinson and Christian Kirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Niners need Christian Kirk on the field like they need a hole in the neck.
Yeah, we see what you did there. Keep going.
What are some other rookies that we like this year?
I can lay a couple on you. And I think this is an exercise in accepting that, you know, not sticking to your priors. Like, I'm looking at the auction values right now, and Casey Concepcion for $1 is like a really nice hold, because I don't think that he's got crazy ceiling, but if he hits, he can give you that Wandale Robinson type production.
Yeah, but that's the wrong dollar guy on that team. You know, it's Denzel Boston.
Well, so that's, I feel like you're playing that for the ceiling, right?
Yeah.
And I can also see paying this for the floor and looking to see if that ceiling might show up, because Concepcion was, you got to remember, his tape was him open downfield a ton, but his quarterback was garbage.
Yeah. But, and frankly, like, it's all you got to beat out Jerry Jeudy. So I think both are interesting choices.
I also have an incredibly gross rookie play that no one's going to draft and redraft that I think is, you know, a step away from a huge role, and that's Jeremy Bernard.
I wouldn't say nobody would draft him, because
I think he's going to be end of back of a lot of people.
He's on several my rosters. Yeah, I drafted him in my dynasty league.
Because I'm a sicko.
That's a great one. I'm way up there.
I think there's a good chance that he could just be better than Michael Pittman at this point.
I mean, yeah. And he also fits. He also fits what Aaron Rodgers wants to do, which is get the ball out of his hands as quick as humanly possible.
Also, how Mike McCarthy uses his slot. Like, there's a lot of data that shows that Jeremy Bernard could just absolutely wreck shit this year.
Yeah, those are my guys. They're stinky, but you know. That's like my last slot guy on the bench that is like fits two of those toolbox roles.
All right. Perfect. I think that does it. Unless anybody has any other guy they want to mention.
I think we covered. We got a good amount.
Perfect. So that is the toolbox bench and building a bench strategy. This one's great because it doesn't just apply to auction, but Evan's the auction guy and he's also the toolbox bench guy. So it's kind of perfect. So next episode, we're going to talk about specific players, specific targets at auction values, guys that we like. For Tony, Evan, and Waleed, this is Jeff. We'll be back in your podcast feed tomorrow. Goodbye.
Take care.